Good morning. We're going to call this meeting of the TRPA Regional Plan Implementation Committee to order. The date is Wednesday, June 23rd, 2021. It's 8:30 a.m. We're having a virtual meeting today. The first item on the agenda is the roll call to determine the quorum of the committee. Mario, would you please call the roll?
Ms. Aldine?
Here.
Mr. Bruce?
Here.
Mr. Friedrich?
I'm sorry, I'm here.
Ms. Gustafson?
Here.
Mr. Lawrence?
Here.
Mr. Yates?
Here.
Mr. Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you very much. Now I'll review our virtual meeting rules for the day. To observe and participate in the meeting, go to www.trpa.gov. Select June 23, 2021 Governing Board meeting on the calendar and follow the link to the webinar. Members of the public can find all meeting materials there as well. In order to participate in this Regional Plan Implementation Committee meeting, with your comments, please utilize the hand-raising function in the GoToWebinar platform at the appropriate agenda item. With your hand raised, you will be unmuted by TRPA staff and have 3 minutes to address the Regional Plan Implementation Committee. If you have contacted TRPA for reasonable accommodation and received a unique PIN for dial-in, please make sure you enter that PIN so that you may be identified and unmuted by TRPA staff. If you are using GoToWebinar's Instant Join web app, please make sure it's opened in the Google Chrome browser and that you allow access to your microphone in order to be unmuted. If you are joining via the call-in number posted on our website, please note this is a listen-only option. If you wish to address the Regional Plan Implementation Committee, you will need to log in via GoToWebinar on your computer, tablet, or smartphone, or dial your unique PIN number. To my colleagues in the Regional Plan Implementation Committee, if you wish to speak, please alert me via the chat function if you are online, or speak up if you're calling in. Please set your chat box now to message panelists and organizers to ensure that I see your message. Committee members may only use the chat function to indicate desire to speak. This function must not be used to have a sidebar conversation, like what are the chances of the Giants winning today? And finally, everyone remember to mute your mic unless speaking to cut down on background noise. I would also like to ask that all members turn on their cameras, as we now have sufficient capacity of our platforms to accommodate all members. The next item is the approval of the agenda. Staff, are there any changes to our agenda?
Mr. Chairman, there are no changes to the agenda.
Thank you very much, John. We'll deem the agenda approved as posted for and the next item, we are now on agenda item 2, which is approval of the minutes. We have a set of minutes from the April 28th, 2021 meeting. It's on page 39 of our packet. Do any member of the committee wish to make a change? I don't see anything on my chat, so I assume not. If not, I will entertain a motion to approve the minutes as presented. All those in favor,
Bill,
say
Bill, aye. I'm sorry. I just need to interject that I did send Mario some minor clerical changes.
Oh, okay. Do you want to make a motion then on those minutes then, Shelley?
I'm prepared to make a motion to approve the minutes from the Regional Plan Implementation Committee meeting of April 28th, 2021, as amended.
Thank you. All right, all those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Any objections? Hearing none, motion passes. Okay, we're on to item number 3, which is the discussion and possible recommendation for approval of Phase 1 housing code amendments to the TRPA code of ordinances related to A, bonus unit boundary, including amendments to Chapter 52, B, accessory dwelling units, including amendments to Chapters 21, 31, 39, 50, 51, 52, and 90. Myers Tahoe Valley Tourist Corps Area Plans and Rules of Procedure, Section 12, and D, Development Rights Strategic Initiative Code Cleanup, Potential Residential Units and Bonus Unit Pools, including amendments to Chapter 51 and 52. Again, as a reminder to the public, after committee discussion on this item, you may raise your hand in the GoToWebinar to be unmuted by TRPA staff to share your comments. Information on this agenda item can be found on page 229 of your packet. Staff is requesting direction from the Regional Plan Implementation Committee on draft housing code amendments developed through the Tahoe Living Housing and Community Revitalization Working Group process related to this bonus unit boundary changes, non-conforming density changes, accessory dwelling units, and code cleanup items related to Development Rights Strategic Initiative. I'll now pass this over to Karen Fink, who will make the staff presentation. Karen?
Thank you. Good morning, Chair, and good morning, committee members. I'm really excited to be presenting these phase one amendments to you this morning. So today we are going over an informational item for you on the phase one housing code amendments. And these have come out of recommendations from the Tahoe Living Working Group. So today we'd like to get your input at this stage before we finalize the code recommendations and finalize the environmental analysis. And then we'll bring this back to you for a recommendation for approval. So in addition to reviewing the housing recommendations, I'm also going to give a status update on where the Tahoe Living Working Group is with the housing actions that the local government and housing committee and the TRPA governing board approved in January of this year. And before I get started, I'll just want to note that the working group has spent many hours working through this proposal and vetting these ideas with us. And we're really appreciative of their time and their input and excited to report out on the progress. So next slide, please. So what we're presenting today is an initial package to remove barriers to the provision of affordable housing and to better implement regional plan goals. So the proposal is based on what we've heard are some of the biggest barriers, most obvious barriers to provision of affordable housing, and the areas where our analysis shows that TRPA can have the biggest impact. So the set of amendments includes the three recommendations that were supported by the working group and which you see here on the screen. They include changes to our code of ordinances, the rules of procedure, and three area plans. And those changes are related to modifying the bonus unit boundary. The bonus unit boundary is where we want to incentivize development and encourage transit supportive densities. The next recommendation is to allow non-conforming tourist density to be used for residential density on site. And this is the first recommendation to increase regional densities at the code level since the 2012 regional plan. And then the third recommendation is related to accessory dwelling units and allowing the smaller housing type more widely in the basin. Next slide, please. So the draft code amendments that I'm presenting today are geared towards supporting three overarching goals. So first, they help us achieve the regional plan goal of walkable town centers and neighborhoods. And second, they help local jurisdictions meet their regional housing needs assessment requirements, the RENA requirements on the California side, and also the housing needs in their local general plans. And those RENA requirements are also part of the regional plan as part of our sustainable community strategy. But those RENA housing needs and housing needs identified in the general plan don't capture the full housing need. The Tahoe Truckee Community Foundation and the Tahoe Prosperity Center, as well as Placer County, have done more extensive housing needs analyses to understand what the housing need is basin-wide. And so the working group is also working towards achieving that greater housing need. And those initial housing needs studies did not capture the Tahoe Basin portion of Washoe County. And the Tahoe Prosperity Center is currently partnering with Washoe County and other organizations in Washoe County to do a housing needs assessment specifically for the Tahoe Basin portion of Washoe County currently. And that will be completed in a couple of months. So there's other goals in the regional transportation plan and the regional plan that these proposals also support. Just a few examples are supporting economic vitality, encouraging moderate income housing in appropriate locations, and increasing transit frequency. And finally, these proposals are fully within the growth caps that were analyzed as part of the regional plan, and they don't increase the overall growth anticipated for the region. Next slide, please. So I want to talk also about how these amendments fit into the larger picture of the set of actions that the Tahoe Living Working Group is working through. So the full name of this working group is the Tahoe Living Community and Housing and Community Revitalization Working Group. And the governing board designated this working group as a committee of the APC in June of 2020. And the chair of the APC is also the chair of this working group. So in January of this year, as you recall, the Local Government Housing Committee and the Governing Board approved the set of actions that you see here on the screen today. And the package of amendments that we're presenting today is the result of work on the near-term action. So that first line in the slide, ADUs and small homes and density. And just for a sense of timing, the near-term actions are anticipated to take between 3 to 6 months to bring forward to the governing board. The medium-term actions are anticipated to take another 6 to 12 months, and the long-term actions another 1 to 2 years. So I want to talk a little bit about how the working group landed on these actions and this set of kind of prioritization. This emerged out of TRPA's analysis, showing which actions were likely to provide the most cost reduction per unit or the greatest number of actual units on the ground. And in addition, TRPA also had in-depth one-on-one conversations with the staff of the local jurisdictions to understand what TRPA actions could best align with and support the actions that those local jurisdictions were already working off of in their own general plans to achieve their housing goals. So these three things: cost reduction per housing unit, units on the ground, and leveraging local actions were what we used to narrow down the possible actions for TRPA to work on and to prioritize them. And one thing that we heard specifically through the conversations with the local jurisdictions and then also through the working group was that even though the regional plan envisioned walkable town centers that were supported by locally focused affordable workforce housing, it's still much easier to get units approved that are ideal for tourist or second homes, while workforce housing still faces additional hurdles. So part of what these actions do is try to establish balance between getting a residential workforce unit on the ground versus a tourist or second home. And you'll see that theme running throughout the proposal today. And then finally, this set of actions focuses on ADUs and density, but this is not everything that we anticipate bringing forward related to ADUs and density. So we heard from the working group that there are additional incentives that they'd like to see, and we anticipate looking at those incentives kind of coming back to accessory dwelling units in the phase, the medium-term and long-term action items. And we'll go into that a little bit more. Next slide, please. So this is the housing cost analysis tool. It's one of the tools that we use to conduct the analysis to land on those priority actions. And we've shown you this before, but just wanted to highlight again how it's a pro forma tool that's proved very useful to help us understand how housing costs change based on the actions that we take. So in this graph, each of the three columns shows the costs that go into building different types of housing. So on the right is a single family standalone home. And then on the left-hand side are two types of multifamily housing. On the left is a moderate density multifamily housing unit, and in the middle is a more dense type of housing development. And the colors in each of the columns show different types of costs. So the large blue square is construction costs, and then there's also land costs, development rights, fees, etc. And the horizontal lines show the income levels of our different income groups in Lake Tahoe that we're trying to provide housing for, affordable, moderate, and achievable. And we can analyze how different actions that TRPA can take can lower the bars more or less. Okay, next slide, please. In January, the Local Government and Housing Committee hosted a workshop on missing middle, which I know some of you attended. And I also wanted to highlight how these code amendments that we're bringing forward today align with the takeaways of that workshop. And the main takeaway was really to be mindful of how the layering of different land use regulations can actually end up precluding housing types that are affordable for middle income families, because there's just not that much that ends up being allowed on a site. So we have found, looking into our regulations, that some of TRPA's regulations combined with market pressures that are somewhat unique to resort areas really end up encouraging people to maximize the size of single family homes. And in a common scenario that results from our code, we found that single family homes in neighborhoods are incentivized to be as large as 4,500 square feet, which is really not affordable for our local workforce. So these amendments today focus on encouraging a diversity of housing types and sizes. Next slide, please. So now we're going to get into the code changes. The first recommendation is to modify the bonus unit boundary to conform to recent planning efforts. As part of looking at density with the working group, we asked them to spend some time thinking about where should we be wanting to incentivize development and what areas do we consider walkable. And so the working group noted that some of our previous planning efforts, such as the RTP, the Regional Transportation Plan, and the Regional Plan, have identified areas where we do want to encourage development or have higher densities. But those did not completely align with the bonus unit boundary that was approved as part of the Development Rights Strategic Initiative. And just to remind folks, the bonus unit boundary is the area in which you can build a residential unit using a bonus unit for the development right, and that bonus unit is provided for free in exchange for a deed restriction for an affordable, moderate, or achievable income housing unit. So a couple of areas where we found that the existing bonus unit boundary, which is the 1/2 mile buffer from transit, didn't fully align with some previous planning efforts, is it didn't include all of the town centers that were identified in the 2012 regional plan, including the Myers Town Center and a walkable area around those town centers. And it also didn't include all of the areas that are zoned for multifamily, including some community priority zones that were identified in the regional transportation plan. So, Maria, if you could have, well, so just again to point out, what the buffer that we're showing here is the existing bonus unit boundary, and that's the 1/2 mile transit buffer. And Maria, if you advance the slide, this shows how the boundary would change if we add in the 1/2 mile buffer of town centers. And you can see that it almost entirely aligns with the existing boundary, but there's a couple of places that it, you know, juts out a bit. And it also adds that Myers Town Center. And then the next slide shows adding districts that are zoned for multifamily. So again, this is fairly consistent with that existing 1/2 mile buffer, but there were a few neighborhoods where there potentially was transit in the past, but it isn't there anymore, but areas where we do have quite a bit of affordable housing and want to be able to continue to encourage affordable housing in those locations. So overall, this expanded the boundary by about 15%. And we've done the initial environmental analysis on this change, and the expanded boundary corresponds very closely to the low VMT traffic analysis zones. So incentivizing development in these areas is consistent with the new transportation and sustainable communities threshold. Next slide, please. Oh, and this shows the full boundary. Okay, next slide, please. So the next recommended code change is to allow non-conforming tourist density to be used on site for residential development. One of the issues that we've heard is that conversion of tourist units to residential is actually disincentivized. So we have quite a few older motels, many of which are getting fairly dilapidated, and many of which have higher densities than are currently allowed by our code because they were built in the 60s and 70s before the regional plan was approved. And our regional plan envisioned redevelopment of these older properties into mixed use or into something that has a residential component, but we are not seeing that. So the next slide demonstrates how our current system works. Maria, if you could advance the slide. Thank you. So basically in the staff report, we provided a real life example of an existing hotel in the state line area that wanted to redevelop into residential. And that hotel was built prior to the approval of the regional plan. So they had 17 tourist units on a little less than a third of an acre. So they were a little bit over the allowable tourist densities. Our current code would allow all of these tourist units to be grandfathered in through a redevelopment project if they are redeveloped as new tourist units, but not if they are redeveloped to new residential units on site. So you can see that if they redevelop to tourists, they would get to keep those 17 units on site, but if they redevelop to residential, they would have to meet the existing residential densities, and that would only allow 6 residential units on site. So they decided to redevelop as tourist. So the next slide, thank you. This shows what the proposed code change would do. So it would allow converted non-conforming tourist density to be used for multi-residential density on site as long as multi-residential is an allowed use in that district. So that proposed code would allow those 17 units to be redeveloped either as new tourist units or as new residential units. And there would still be some extra development rights that would result from the conversion of tourists to multifamily, but those could be banked on site or transferred off. And that's the same as what we have under our current code. So we've also completed the initial environmental analysis for this change, and we've identified that because the conversion of tourist units to residential was already evaluated through the development rights strategic initiative, and those environmentally neutral conversion rates were established, that this change is also consistent with our thresholds and will support achieving our thresholds, including the transportation and sustainable communities threshold. And again, this stays within our growth caps. It doesn't add any new growth potential. Next slide, please. So the final, main recommendation is related to accessory dwelling units. So this part of the proposal relates back to what I was mentioning earlier about looking at ways to make it easier to build a diversity of home types, including smaller housing types that are the right size to be affordable for our local residents and workforce, and trying to remove some of those barriers that impede this type of development compared to other types of development. So ADUs, accessory dwelling units, are one of those smaller housing types, and they are basically a housing unit that is accessory to a larger existing home. They can be detached from the main home, or they can be attached, such as an over-the-garage unit or repurposed existing space, like locking off a bedroom and adding an exterior door. And that last type is often called a junior ADU. So our existing code related to accessory dwelling units doesn't go very far in encouraging this workforce housing type. Right now, our code only allows accessory dwelling units on parcels that are greater than 1 acre, and there just aren't very many parcels that meet that criterion. Also, on average, our parcel sizes get smaller the closer the parcel is to transit and town centers, and they get larger the further away that they are. So we want to shift the focus to, first of all, just allowing this smaller housing type more widely, and then also having ADUs help us meet our goals of supporting walkable town centers and walkable neighborhoods. So this proposal, combined with that bonus unit boundary, really does that. So next slide, please. So the current code only allows ADUs on parcels of greater than 1 acre, and where they are allowed, we only allow one per parcel. Also, because allowing ADUs as an accessory use is an exception right now, since it's only allowed on a few parcels, they require special noticing to neighbors, unlike other expansions of single family uses. So the next slide, please. So based on the general consensus of the working group, we are proposing to lift the 1 acre parcel size limit, so ADUs would be allowed on any residential parcel. We're also proposing to allow up to 2 ADUs per parcel. This would allow a homeowner to build 1 junior ADU and 1 detached ADU. And then because ADUs would be an allowed use on all residential parcels, just like other accessory uses, they wouldn't require special noticing to neighbors. Next slide, please. Okay, so that was the summary of TRPA's proposed regulations. Local jurisdictions can have more restrictive regulations, and I wanted to go over what the current regulations are at the local level that will also be in effect. Also, the designs of ADUs need to meet local design regulations. So right now, Douglas County and Washoe County have codified TRPA's restriction to parcels of greater than 1 acre. So unless and until those counties change their code, that's in their local codes, where ADUs are allowed in those counties effectively will not be any different than it is today. There are some opportunities to look at revising that through the area plan process. Then on the California side, each jurisdiction has passed or is in the process of passing their own ADU regulations that reflect the California law. So based on this, in the California jurisdictions, ADUs would be allowed on all residential parcels. However, they are not allowed to be rented out for rentals of less than 30 days. And there are also size limitations. And then as you will note in your packet, we are bringing forward the area plan amendments that are needed for those California jurisdictions to be able to implement the ADU codes. That's also part of this packet. And then I did just also want to note that whenever an accessory dwelling unit gets a bonus unit, the bonus unit also requires the ADU to be deed restricted so that it cannot be used as a short-term rental. We've also completed the environmental analysis, or we're finalizing the environmental analysis for this proposal. And with respect to our transportation and sustainable communities threshold, we found that this proposal does not cause the basin to exceed that new threshold. The distribution pattern for ADUs is expected to be fairly similar to the anticipated distribution pattern for other allocations and bonus units. So that wraps up the summary of the main recommendations, those 3 main recommendations that we're bringing forward. In the packet, we did also include 2 cleanup amendments based on the Development Rights Strategic Initiative, and I'm happy to answer any questions about those as well. And now I want to go over some additional working group feedback that we weren't able to incorporate into this near-term recommendation, although the recommendation largely does capture the feedback that we received from the working group. And there was very strong support for moving the set of recommendations forward. There were a couple of key areas where working group members wanted to see the proposal go further, and that was in the areas of coverage and development rights. So you probably noted during the presentation that the recommendations do not include any changes to our coverage regulations or our development rights regulations. So an ADU would require, if someone wants to build an ADU, they need to have the sufficient allowable coverage on their parcel to be able to do that. And about two-thirds of parcels do not have enough allowable coverage to build a detached ADU. So some working group members were concerned that that wouldn't, you know, incentivize this housing type sufficiently. Also, another concern was related to development rights, and that was that ADUs are usually small. They're generally a studio or a one bedroom. And there was concern that perhaps they shouldn't use up a whole bonus unit or a whole development right, which could also be used to build a much larger house. We don't have any size limits on the size of house that is built with a development right. So there is some precedent in having development rights have different ratios depending on the type of unit. For instance, through the Development Rights Strategic Initiative, there's different conversion ratios for multifamily housing than there are for single family housing, recognizing the lower impacts of multifamily housing. So we definitely heard this input and really appreciate that there potentially are more incentives that we need to look at related to ADUs. And we do plan, we have some places designated in the medium term and long term phases where we can spend some more time looking at potential incentives in those categories. Next slide, please. So this month we're doing informational hearings to the APC. We already gave it informational hearings to the APC and the Local Government and Housing Committee, and then today to the Regional Plan Implementation Committee. And both the APC and the Local Government Housing Committee gave us direction to move the amendments forward into finalizing the environmental analysis and into recommendations for approval. And we are scheduled to begin bringing this forward for recommendations for approval in July. So thank you very much for your attention. And I'm really looking forward to hearing your thoughts and input on this set of recommendations.
Erin, thank you very much for taking putting this together in a rather short way of all the work that's been done by this working group. I'm really pleased that the way that this has been handled, we recognized the importance of housing and how we address that, and we started with development rights changes. But this is was really quite significant. I'm pleased you were able to break this down to those things you think you can get accomplished quickly, and then working from there to the longer term issues. So I do have a question from Shelley. I didn't want to interrupt Karen's presentation. So Shelley, hopefully you kept your question to what was raised during her presentation.
Yes, no problem, Bill. Karen, I kind of alluded to this in the local government committee meeting, but I did a little further investigation, and I found that the definition in our code and the definition of moderate income housing says that it's deed restricted to be used exclusively as a residential dwelling by permanent residents. The same wording is used in the definition of achievable housing, but it's not used in the definition of affordable housing. So are we anticipating that these affordable housing units, you know, I think the whole intent of this exercise is to provide residential housing for people who actually work and live in the basin. I'm kind of troubled by the fact that there's a lot of wiggle room and latitude in the definition of affordable housing. I know that it can't be used for housing that rentals that are less than 30 days, which helps to address the concern that's been expressed by people like Carol Black, that these units are going to become de facto STRs. I also think it's important that they not become extended stay motels. I mean, I think that defeats the whole purpose of this exercise. And I suppose it could be handled by the local jurisdictions in terms of imposing additional requirements. But is there a reason why that language is not included in the affordable housing definition, the fact that it's intended for permanent residents in the basin?
I am not sure about that, but that seems like something that we could look into before we bring this back for approvals and potentially identify whether there's a modification to the definition of affordable housing that's needed. I don't see why we couldn't continue to look at that.
Yeah, that would be great. And I also, maybe I missed it, but you might want to take a look at definitions. I noticed that there is no, I don't know if I can find my notes here. In chapter 90 of our code, the definition I think needs to be right now when it refers to ADUs, they refer you to secondary dwellings. So now we're distinguishing between secondary dwellings and ADUs. So I think we need to amend chapter 90 to reflect that change.
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Karen, this is Cindy. To Shelley's point, I know we've had quite a few discussions on length of duration, and we have a real need both for shorter term, not short term rentals, but shorter term renters, say summer employees or winter employees. So one of the things about a year round limitation is you might eliminate some of the housing where we've had, especially when we have homeowners who are willing to lease for maybe 3 to 6 months, but not for a full year. So we're trying to use a definition that says more than 30 days, obviously, and that they have a local place of employment wherever we can. And I know we can't do that with some of the affordable housing and look at their employment, but on our more moderate and achievable, Placer County is looking at that requirement that they work full-time, 30 hours minimum in the school district boundaries, so that includes Truckee, that one member of the household must work in that area, because we don't want to facilitate people maybe moving up here from San Francisco and working for a tech company in San Francisco remotely and being able to take advantage of this housing. So I know it's tricky to get all these definitions in and under the state and federal laws, but those are a few other concepts that we've been working on to try to really focus on our local workforce that we need.
Thank you, Cindy. That does raise the complication. And hopefully, because California law doesn't necessarily bind TRPA, we can coordinate with the local governments on areas where you don't have the authority to do much on limitations on things like ADUs. And we can try to put together a comprehensive Tahoe Basin approach that would address some of these issues. And certainly we should look at other areas where we were beginning to in the code changes that staff's presenting for this informational hearing, of changes to terms like secondary and things to the term accessory dwelling unit. So we just need to do further clarification. And I'm sure our acting general counsel, Marsha Burke, is taking copious notes here to pass on to John Marshall when he returns on this issue. But Jim, you have a question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, everybody. It's good to see everyone. I do have a question or a comment, but first I want to, I did participate in many of the working group meetings, and I want to extend appreciation and compliments to Karen and the team for all of the meetings that were very well run. Materials came out in advance so that we had time to read it. So kudos to the staff for doing an excellent job on this. I do want to, and we got a comment letter from Carol Black, and this came up a lot with the ADUs, and that was regarding concern about having them just end up being STRs and not really addressing some of the housing issues. The way I understand it, we do have some safeguards in place, but the global one is if a bonus unit is used, then a deed restriction is required. And listening to the conversation with from Shelley and Cindy, I think a little more work needs to be done on the definitions. And then on the California side, the local jurisdictions have a no less than 30-day rental requirement, but that doesn't occur in Washoe and Douglas. And the same thing with Washoe and Douglas, their local ordinances still have a minimum 1 acre. So I guess, quick care, my question is in your conversations with local jurisdictions, has this come up as a topic of A, you know, them wanting to come and basically align with a no parcel minimum, but two, also to discuss sort of a minimum rental period in order to get at the STR sort of issue?
Is your question related to the two Nevada counties specifically?
It is to the Nevada counties, because it looks like from your presentation, Karen, it looks like on the California county side, there is no minimum lot size and there is a minimum rental period that doesn't occur currently in Washoe and Douglas. And I'm wondering, in your conversations, is that being contemplated at the local level on Nevada?
So we have discussed accessory dwelling units with the local jurisdiction staff in Douglas County and Washoe County. We talked about it in those one-on-one meetings. And basically, our sense was from those staff, and if any of them are here, they might want to chime in, but that ADUs have not really risen to the top as a housing solution yet in Nevada like they have in California. There's just been a lot of discussion in California. Obviously, there's the California legislation, so people are very familiar with them and really pushing for them, whereas in Nevada, that just hasn't happened yet. So the staff felt like that was something that ADUs were something they might want to look at in the future, but it wasn't a key strategy that had been identified in their housing plans at all. So it was sort of a emerging issue, like something they would like to look at down the road, but it wasn't something, you know, and they could look at it through their area plans, but it wasn't something that they were saying, you know, we're ready to look at this tomorrow. And definitely the short-term rental, you know, concern about short-term rentals was one of the key concerns that they cited in kind of needing to take more time to develop how they would be used.
Thanks, Karen. That's helpful. You know, my personal opinion is that, you know, if Washoe or Douglas County were to move forward and expand to no minimum lot size, I do think having some sort of safeguard in place, whether it's a minimum rental period or some other mechanism, I do think that will be important. So I know that's down the road, but I just wanted to make that comment. So thank you.
I don't have any further questions in the chat. Does anyone else among my colleagues want to make a comment? If not, I think staff, I'll open this up to the public comment period. Catherine, are you going to assist in this one?
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Yes, I will be assisting with public comment today. The first hand up we have is Carol Black. Carol, you're unmuted on my end to address the committee.
Good morning. Well, I sent in written comments and obviously folks have seen them, so I appreciate that. It's awesome to have been mentioned already twice, and I won't reiterate everything. I want to pick up specifically on this last discussion about ADUs. I want to put a scenario for you from the Nevada side, which has been, at least in Washoe County, which is, as you know, is where I live in Incline Village, slow to implement any kind of regulation regarding short-term rentals. It's just barely getting started at this point in time. I am very concerned that about what will happen. The whole Nevada side will be putting up, and the whole California side will have the opportunity to put up ADUs and will be able, and they will be restricted to not being short-term rentals effectively based on California law. That means that on the Nevada side, depending on what might happen, but it could certainly happen to have that 1 acre restriction removed because Nevada has taken the approach, at least Washoe County has taken the approach of paralleling TRPA. So you remove the 1 acre restriction. Seems like that may go. You don't include the short-term rental, the 30-day restriction. And we become the site for ADU development for purposes of expanding short-term rentals for the lake. And that I know Washoe situation much better than Douglas, but I think it could apply in both places. So I would strongly urge you to consider putting in some sort of a clause at this moment in time that doesn't allow us to end up in that, I'll call it a quagmire. It's an initiative designed to improve workforce, affordable, achievable housing. I hope I have all the adjectives correct. And I support that. But what I don't support and hope that you will pay increasing attention to, as you are now in this discussion, is avoiding further collateral adverse effects of overtourism and overdevelopment and not addressing the underlying issues that you're working on here today. So with that, I put in some other issues that we have concerns about in the central area and some decreased setback requirements and ability to purchase coverage, which is increasing, expanding the building of smaller parcels, such that we're all worried about runoff to the lake in our area, which is very strange. So those are things that, and you've heard about, turns out the measurement and evacuation, and I won't belabor that this morning, but I did want to make these points, and I appreciate your time. And thank you very much. This is a huge initiative, and it's important, we get it right. So thank you for your time this morning.
Carol, thank you. I do appreciate your comments, Carol, and I think all of us appreciate the concerns that you raise, good issues, and they're not easy issues, and I think you also recognize that. So we'll keep working on those. Any other comments, Catherine?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Brandy Brown. You're unmuted on my end. If you unmute for yourself, you can address the committee.
Thank you guys so much for everything you guys are doing to help bring ADUs to both the California and Nevada side. I'm very excited to see the progress, and I so appreciate you, Karen, always answering my emails and my questions. I know that you've gotten the documents and everything that I have sent over. I'm curious to know if in the near future, some updated descriptions on what some of these ADU units can be, not only bonus units, junior ADUs, but also possibly tiny homes are going to be addressed as descriptions of what can be utilized as ADUs on parcels. So I'm hoping that's coming up in a discussion. I haven't quite heard it at any of these presentations quite yet. So I guess that's my question. Are you guys discussing that? Is that a...
Thank you for your comment. Karen, I assume we would be looking at all of these issues, correct?
Yeah, so there's a few different types of tiny homes, and one of them is stick-built tiny homes. So those are already included in what's the types of accessory dwelling units that would be allowed. They just need to meet local building codes. Another type of tiny home is it's basically a home on a wheeled chassis. That type of home is classified as a mobile home in TRPA's code. So they would only be allowed currently where mobile homes are allowed, and those are also reflected throughout the plan area statements and the area plans. So that is something where we'd want to work with the local jurisdictions, and if they wanted to allow tiny homes on wheeled chassis to be used as ADUs, they could work with us through the area plan amendment process and the plan area statement amendment process on that.
Thank you, Karen. That's extremely helpful. I appreciate it.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question for Karen.
Sure, Shelley, go ahead.
Karen, with respect to your last comment, so with that, if you wheel in a tiny home and it's on a chassis, it's not on a permanent foundation, is that considered temporary coverage under our code? How would that be handled from a coverage standpoint?
Well, it wouldn't be allowed unless mobile homes were allowed in that location. If mobile homes are allowed in that location, it's considered permanent coverage.
Permanent coverage. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Catherine, any other comments?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have one more hand raised. Steve Teixeira, you're unmuted on my end. Go ahead.
Thank you, Catherine. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Steve Teixeira commenting on behalf of Tahoe Chamber. First of all, I want to agree with those of you who have indicated your appreciation for the work of the committee. This is difficult stuff to work your way through. A lot of good ideas coming up. Appreciated Karen's always detailed presentation and the discussion that she brought forward about the other issues that the committee wants to see addressed, hopefully sooner rather than later. Appreciated Cindy's points about the seasonal workforce needs. I know that's another complicating issue, but it really does need to be addressed. There are people that need workforce housing for seasons, be it summer, winter, et cetera. I think the chairman had a suggested approach to that. One thing during the presentation that struck me was Karen's conveying of Douglas County planning staff that they're concerned about ADUs or dwelling units that are we're discussing today because they're concerned about short-term rental use. That seems to me to be inconsistent with the fact that the County Commission in Douglas recently approved a cap of 600 short-term rentals in Tahoe Township, which is the only part of the county where they allow short-term rentals. So I'm not sure that that's really an appropriate response. We continue to have concerns that the overall prevailing official response to the need for affordable workforce housing in Douglas County is less than it should be. We think that these types of units are a viable workforce housing solution, and we think that they should be available in all the counties of the basin. So we, in summary, we have participated in many of the meetings. We continue to do so, and we encourage this committee on the informational to get additional items back from Karen when it comes to you for a recommendation. But thank you for the good work.
Thank you, Steve, for your comments. Catherine, is that the last public comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Brandy Brown has her hand back up. Is it agreeable to unmute again for additional comment?
I think her, just for a quick comment, oh, sure.
Sorry, her hand went back down. Looks like an error. Natalie Yanish also has her hand up. Natalie, you're unmuted on my end. If you unmute yourself, you can address the committee.
Hello, thank you. My name is Natalie Yanish. I am with the Contractors Association of Truckee Tahoe, and I also participated in the Tahoe Living Working Group. I want to thank everybody for their efforts on this issue because there was a lot of meetings and time put into it and consideration, and the committee had a lot of varying opinions as well. I just wanted to bring forward that any sort of, carrots or incentives that can possibly be passed in the ordinance is important. As you probably all heard, construction costs now have gone pretty crazy. Lumber prices have calmed down a little bit, but as you know, construction prices tend to always go up. They hardly ever go back down. So the cost for developers to come in and create primary residence housing, it's difficult for them to make that pencil. So deed restrictions are one consideration. Being as flexible as possible with those is helpful because whoever's investing or developing in these housing projects or residential projects, they have to consider resale, and deed restrictions are often, devalue a property. So just something to keep in mind, just the market forces and the private industry and, how these regulations actually incentivize people to put some residential housing on the ground, you know, it needs to be flexible, and hopefully we can get more carrots than we can get regulations and sticks, and hopefully that spurs some actual redevelopment projects on the ground here in Tahoe. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, there are no hands raised to make additional public comments.
Thank you. Thank you, Catherine, for covering that. John, you had a comment you said after the public comment.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to just, good to see everybody, and also just add my thanks to Karen for excellent work. I participated in many of the working group meetings, and as has been discussed, there were other creative ideas that I think can be considered in the future to further incentivize ADUs in particular. But I certainly at this point strongly support moving this forward as quickly as possible. Glad to hear it's coming back, I guess, in July. Karen, every day we hear about another family in crisis in the basin. So these are all good steps in the right direction to address the systemic problem we have with lack of affordable places to live. To Ms. Brown's point, the City of Lake Tahoe will be having a discussion on adding mobile tiny homes to our code. You know, of course, then it will be subject to working, as Karen said, with TRPA on plan area statements, et cetera, to conform should we go that direction. But anyway, I, you know, bottom line, support this moving the whole package forward as quickly as possible. And thanks again to Karen and the staff for getting us to this point.
Thank you, John. It's good information. What the city's doing, that sounds great. The two areas. One is how do we deal with coverage when we're increasing development on existing areas and reducing the 1 acre limit, and the fact that I think you said, Karen, 2/3 of the things wouldn't meet coverage. So how do we do that? Immediately what comes in my brain is think, well, maybe this is somewhere where the Tahoe Conservancy and its lots that he has could be a place where we could bank coverage and work this out in those areas where we want development to occur, to discourage the development in areas that we don't want to occur, as in stream environment zones. And then on the question of cutting bonus units into discrete parts, which is recommended as one of the committee members. Initially, I thought, oh boy, that'd be kind of complicated. But at the same time, it would be a shame to use an entire bonus unit for a very small junior ADU. So maybe John Hester and rest of staff can kind of put their hat on to figure out how we would do that in a fair way and also be able to keep track of it as we go through some of this in the future. It is I think a unique situation within the Tahoe Basin to try to come up with workforce housing within the basin and meet our requirements and still make it affordable. And I know that when we went through the development rights initiative, we could waive everything and still the cost of housing is a problem. It was the land cost that we possibly could help out in. And that was with our partners, both on both sides of the lake, Nevada and California, where our land banks could help us with that cost. But I think the work that you're doing is great. I agree with John. I think it's time just to move forward. And I'm unless there's any other comments from my colleagues, I think a motion is in order to regarding our what we would recommend you go forward and do. I don't see any more comments, so any of my colleagues want to make the motion to recommend staff finalize these code amendments and develop through the Tahoe Living Housing and Community Revitalization Working Group process?
So moved.
Okay. Thank you, Shelley. Any other discussion from committee members? I don't see anything. So, Maria, would you give a roll call on that?
Ms. Alding?
Yes.
Ms. Gustafson?
Yes.
Mr. Bruce?
Yes.
Mr. Friedrich?
Yes.
Mr. Lawrence?
Yes.
Mr. Yates?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, that motion passes.
Thank you very much. And thank you for your presentation, Karen.
Thank you, everyone.
Okay, the next item is item number four, discussion and possible recommendation of the update of the mobility mitigation fee, the former air quality mitigation fee, including amendments to the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency Rules of Procedure, section 10.8.5.A, for initial update to the fee amount. And again, as a reminder to the public, after committee discussion on this item, you may raise your hand in the GoToWebinar to be unmuted by TRPA staff to share your comments. Information on all agenda items can be found on page 265 of your packet. And I'm passing it to Melanie Sloan to provide the staff report on this item.
Thank you. Hello, committee. Melanie Sloan, Senior Transportation Planner with TRPA. And I'm here to talk to you about an interim fee update recommendation in your packet. Before I dive into those details, I just want to talk briefly about what brought me here today. Back in April on the 28th, the Governing Board approved updates to the Code of Ordinances for how projects impacts to transportation are evaluated using vehicle miles traveled, or VMT. And in that same update, the air quality mitigation fee was renamed to the mobility mitigation fee. And that fee was changed in how it calculates projects' impacts to transportation from trips to vehicle miles traveled to align with that impact assessment update. And as a reminder, those updates were made to implement the new vehicle miles traveled per capita threshold at the project level, and also to align with our California jurisdictions that are updating their project impact assessment processes using vehicle miles traveled as well. They're doing that per California regulation SB 743. Next slide, please. So I'm bringing forward today phase one of a two-phase process to update the mobility mitigation fee program. The recommendation in your packet today is for an interim update to the rules of procedure, and that's to simply translate that current fee rate from trips to vehicle miles traveled. And I'll walk through that process over the next couple of slides. The second phase of that update would be a planning process that we'd complete by year end, and that would fully revise the mobility mitigation fee program, linking it more closely to the VMT reducing projects and the recently updated 2020 regional transportation plan. And that process will complete full evaluation and policy considerations around fee rates, peer community fees, and also allow for robust stakeholder engagement. Policy discussion about that fee program would come back to this committee later this year. Next slide, please. So this lays out what we currently have in our rules of procedure. It's the air quality mitigation fee, which we would rename to mobility mitigation fee. And the fee rate before you is what is charged to projects, but it's apportioned based on the type of the land use type of the project. If it's generating trips, it would be charged 90% of that fee rate. And if it's attracting trips, it would be charged 10% of that fee rate. Currently, that's calculated using the trips a project generates. Next slide, please. And so the recommendation is to adopt updates to the rules of procedure to adjust that fee rate to reflect vehicle miles traveled. And you can see in this table, the current fees in the second column are divided by the trip length for the number of miles of an average trip in Tahoe, which is 6.53. And so we take a fee charged on trips, divide it by the average miles of a trip, and then you see on the last column what those updates to the rules of procedure would be, and those fees charged to projects. So the result is really, it's an equivalent fee to what's being currently charged. Next slide, please. So the recommendation request in your packet is to update the rules of procedure, that phase one, and then it will be brought to governing board on consent later today. The impact assessment processes using vehicle miles traveled goes into effect June 26th. That follows the 60-day period following that April 28th governing board approval of the updates to the process. And then we'll also be rolling out our online project impact assessment tool at the same time. And if adopted, that phase one, the interim mobility mitigation fee update, that will go into effect July 28th. And so between June 26th and July 28th, projects would have their impact evaluated with vehicle miles traveled and their fee calculated on trips. But starting July 28th, it would be both evaluated and fees charged on VMT. And all of that would be able to be done with that online project impact assessment tool. And then phase two of the fee program update, once we had governing board action, would begin, and that planning process again through the year end to fully update the program. Next slide. So that's it. It's a fairly straightforward request to the committee today. Thank you for your attention. And next slide. I'm available for questions should you have any.
Thank you, Melanie. That's a very nice, succinct thing of what we're doing. We're just simply making a change from the old air quality mitigation fee based on trips to our new vehicle miles traveled reduction project.
Yes, correct.
Thing to the vehicle VMT. So I don't see any comments from my colleagues. Any comments out there? You want to wave your hand? I can see you all, but seeing none, I just will open up to public comment. Catherine?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let's see, one hand raised, Gavin Feiger. You are unmuted on my end. You unmute yourself, you can address the committee.
Hey, good morning. This is Gavin Feiger with the League of Save Lake Tahoe. Can you hear me all right?
I can, Kevin. Thank you.
Great, thanks. We're happy to see this going forward at this point, but as you know, we provided plenty of comments to our PIC and governing board on the VMT package over the course of the last year and a half, and just want to make sure one thing didn't get lost, and that was with the mobility mitigation fee, when the second phase setting the actual fee, a thing we talked about a lot was making sure that the mitigation fee really incentivizes development in town centers. So, it's going to mean that the mitigation fee for development outside town centers is going to have to be pretty high. And we talked about this a lot with staff and with governing board and RPIC, and just want to make sure that doesn't get lost in this phase two, that's looked at with the white paper and really considered how we can incentivize development in town centers using the mitigation fee. So just keeping that on the radar for RPIC here. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Gavin. And again, thanks to all the help the League staff and you provided on VMT. I assume, Melanie, that this when we talk about the phase two, we'll be looking at these kind of issues to incentivize things where we want to happen and where it's more walkable, bikeable, versus the fee that would be charged for development outside of those areas where, again, vehicle miles would be increased.
That is correct. Taking the additional time allows us to consider multiple policy options, including, as Gavin suggested, the use of the fee for further incentive or for development in those town and regional centers.
So just for all the members to know that we'll still have an opportunity to have further discussions about the issue of vehicle miles traveled. Okay. Is there any other comments after the public? Is that the last public comment? I'm sorry, Catherine, is that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There is another hand raised. Patrick Taylor, you're unmuted on my end. If you unmute yourself, you can address the committee.
Is there any allowances in this change in regards to projects outside of town centers in regards to workforce housing?
So that's a great question. The mobility mitigation fee charges fees on all projects that generate new VMT, including affordable, moderate, and achievable housing. What we did through the impact assessment, however, is if that project is located in an area eligible for bonus units, we screened it from additional analysis. So the break came more in what was expected for analysis of those types of projects. The fee, as it currently stands, is charged on all projects except active transportation projects, but would be charged to affordable, moderate, and achievable housing. One reason we did that is, as you could tell from the prior presentation, my colleague Karen Fink, through the Housing Initiative, is taking a very deep and detailed dive into all of the facets that influence housing development in the region. And so we didn't want to advance anything ahead of that work. And so instead, we're looking to that work for recommendations, and we'll modify and adjust and incorporate those recommendations as they come forward.
Thank you, Patrick, for your question, and Melanie, for your response. It's a good question.
Mr. Chairman, this is John Hester. If I could add to Melanie's response, and Patrick attends the working group meetings and is invited to bring that issue up. As you brought up, coverage, fees are another thing that we're looking at. A lot of those other items that have come up in your discussion and the point Patrick just brought up are on the agenda for the housing group to look at after we get this first round through. So Patrick, please stay engaged in that. And I think we can address, we will be addressing fees and coverage and those other issues.
Hi, this is Barbara Sagaski. I'm on.
Okay, Barbara, this is the Regional Plan Implementation Committee meeting.
Okay, so you're still going. All right, I'll
we're still
I'll
going.
Put
yes, we are.
On mute. Okay, thank you.
Oh, thanks. Okay.
Mr. Chair, there are no other hands raised to make a public comment.
Thank you, Catherine. So, any other comments from the committee members regarding this item? Seeing none. We have a couple of motions to make to the governing board for their action today. This item, actually, unless we have some opposition, will go on the consent calendar. I'm ready. Any one of you want to make them motions, please do.
Sure, I'll do it.
Thanks,
so just do it. I'll do them both at the same time. I'll make a motion to adopt the findings, including a finding of no significant effect as set forth in Exhibit 1, and 2, a motion to adopt Resolution 21-, to amend the rules of procedures as set forth in Exhibit 3.
Marcia, is that okay for a committee motion just to combine both motions?
Yes, I think that's fine.
Okay, thank you. So this would be our recommendation to the full board. Maria, would you call the roll, please?
Ms. Alding?
Yes.
Ms. Gustafson?
Yes.
Mr. Bruce?
Yes.
Mr. Friedrich?
Yes.
Mr. Lawrence?
Yes.
Mr. Yates?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, that motion passes.
Thank you very much, Maria. And thank you, colleagues, and Melanie, for the succinct presentation and for the good comments from the public about what further work has to be done. So now it's that item 5 on our agenda for committee member comments. And you can, as far as I'm concerned, speak up or you can send me a chat. Anything that you have, I see none. And so we'll open it up for our final public interest comment period, item number 6. We are now on that item. If any member of the public wishes to address a Regional Plan Implementation Committee on an item not on the agenda, please raise your hand now on the in the GoToWebinar to be unmuted by TRPA staff. Catherine, do we have any? Or you want to give a few minutes or?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll give members of the public one more second to find have a hand raising button if they'd like to make a comment. There are no hands raised to make a comment at this item.
Okay. Thank you very much. I will then close the public comment period, and I will accept a motion to adjourn. I just want to point out, Mr. Chair, that I think we are done ahead of time.
Mr. Chairman, before we adjourn, I just want to notify the public that we will convene a meeting of the Operations and Governance Committee at 10 to 10.
Yes. Okay. So we're about 5 minutes out from that. I really appreciate, Bill, the efficiency, as always, of the meeting. And thank you very much. I'm looking forward to the governing board meeting a little bit later this morning. Thanks, Shelley.
So all those in favor of adjournment, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, meeting adjourned. Thank you very much.